Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Hi, I'm Kevin. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a Democrat, but on the moderate side.
Hi, I'm DJ from Suffolk, Virginia, and I am a self-described economic conservative and self-confessed Republican.
And I'm your liberal Democrat. My name's Greg, and I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. Let's get it on.
Let's get it on. So you can find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, plus some blogs and commentary that we occasionally add there. Please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes, because that's how we make the hundreds of thousands of dollars that support our families.
We what? Where is that money? I don't remember seeing any
of it. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that in front of DJ. I'm sorry. So, a lot of stuff happening this week. What do you guys want to talk about first?
Yeah, I would actually start with the fact that the former mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, is once again looking at a possible presidential run. And the reason this matters to me personally is because essentially he is doing this because he is very concerned about what would happen if Donald Trump were the nominee, and so am I. But I will say that if this is a race between Trump and Bloomberg and Clinton, if those are my choices, then I will take Michael Bloomberg any day of the week and twice on Sunday. Or is it Tuesday? Well, yeah, if I can vote twice, yeah, do it.
Yeah, don't do it twice on Sunday. That's illegal.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So, but the simple fact of the matter is, and I know there's much of the talk that I've seen is that, oh, well, Bloomberg will take votes from Hillary. Of course he will. And I'm not so sure about that. And here's why. Michael Bloomberg, although he was considered by a lot of people a Republican in name only, he was a very good mayor of New York. He followed in the tradition of Rudolph Giuliani. He continued a lot of things that Giuliani did. And he made a serious effort, in my opinion, on education reform. And if Bloomberg make that essentially running a campaign on education reform and reaching out to work with Republicans and Democrats. Don't forget, he was a Republican and then an unaffiliated mayor who worked with an overwhelming Democratic legislature, the Democratic City Council. I mean, the number of Republicans on the city council is 3, and there are 51 city councilmen there. So he had to reach across party lines to get things done. He managed to do it, and he did it as a Republican. He did it as an independent. And he would be able to use that as a unique answer to the question that nearly every independent candidate has or a minor party candidate has, which is, well, how is he going to work with a Congress full of people who don't like him because they're Republicans and Democrats and he's an independent? Well, he's answered that question. He did that for 12 years as mayor of New York. So I think a Bloomberg candidacy, if it's Bloomberg, Trump, and Clinton, I think Bloomberg would be a formidable candidacy. I think it would get support from places that people do not expect. I'm not going to go so far as to say that Bloomberg would win, because I need to see what he's like as a national candidate as opposed to a New York candidate. But I certainly think he would have a good chance of beating Trump.
I agree. And when, you know, I get accused a lot of times of being so partisan because I'm that liberal Democrat. When people say, do you like any Republicans? I always yell, oh, Bloomberg's my guy. And he does have appeal across the aisle. He's very likable, and he does have that, you know, I completely agree. But I've kind of read the situation is he won't run if Hillary wins, only if Bernie gets the Democratic nomination. If he sees that opening, if he sees Bernie as weak, he sees Trump as weak. But he knows that Hillary – he's kind of leaked that out.
That's my understanding too.
Yeah.
So to me, the billion-dollar question is not whether he might do well. The question is, could he win? And I think he can. I actually think that as an independent for the first time in this nation's history, I think that he could win if it was him versus Trump and Sanders.
Let me just say, I would agree with Kevin completely. If it was Bloomberg, Trump, and Sanders – I think Bloomberg would have an excellent chance of winning. In fact, he might actually get a majority of the popular vote.
Yeah, but we've talked about third-party voter laws and we've talked about independence and blah, blah. We've talked about this many times. But the other question and the billion-dollar question, how do you guys feel about two billionaires being on tickets here?
Well,
I mean, being self-financed. running for the highest office. Does that bother anybody else?
It doesn't bother me. To me, it's like a sitcom. I don't know whether the title would be Two Billionaires and a Socialist or Two and a Half Capitalists. I think it's Two and a Half Capitalists, but it's so crazy, and yet it's so delicious, to use a phrase that Greg likes to use a lot. I mean, how could the country not want to see that?
If it were actually Trump, Bloomberg, and Clinton, it could actually be three New Yorkers in a White House. But the thing about Bloomberg is, yes, Bloomberg is very, very wealthy, but he's also a three-term mayor of New York City. He would have more executive branch experience than Trump, Cruz, Clinton, and Sanders combined.
I'm a co-leader of my daughter's Girl Scout troop. I almost have more executive branch experience than all those people you've named.
I agree that bar is low. However,
it's ridiculous. I mean, and that's kind of the problem. We're saying, look at these people, and they've got so much. I mean, they've got more experience, but that is such a low bar, isn't it?
That in itself would be a low bar, but Bloomberg himself sets the bar very high. He was mayor of the largest city in the country for 12 years.
Yes,
a city that has more people in it than a large number of states in this country. He has a history of working with a legislature that was incredibly hostile to, in theory at least, incredibly hostile to him on a partisan basis. He managed to work around that. He managed to work with folks in both parties in Albany to begin rearranging the education system in New York so that he could have effective mayoral control and move forward on education reform. But they don't know that yet.
Here's another thing that it would be interesting about a Bloomberg candidacy, which, by the way, I just thought of another great title because, as you know, DJ, and you probably know Greg, too, he has a domestic partner, a woman that he lives with. So with Trump and Clinton and Bloomberg in that race, we could call it 4.5 marriages. but here's another thing that would be interesting about it is if Bloomberg runs, he's going to have some of the biggest lobbying groups in the world, in the country, lined up against him. He's going to have the NRA against him in a massive way, and soda manufacturers. So a lot of dark money going into that campaign.
We do not know about big caffeine. I cannot answer what big caffeine might want to do. But I mean, yes, I think it's obvious that the NRA would go after him. The NRA would probably go after him very hard. And you know, I'm when I talk to my fellow Republicans and they think that I'm completely nuts, I will say, yes, I disagree with Mike Bloomberg on gun rights, but you have to look at his total record. And most Republicans, and frankly, a lot of Democrats, haven't had the chance to look at his total record yet.
That's true. That's true. And the other thing is, let's say that Bloomberg was running in the NRA or gun activists wanted to make a case against him. The counter argument is, well, you've got a man in the White House right now who's desperately wanted to do something on gun rights for seven, almost 8 years, and hasn't been able to make a dent. So the odds are that Michael Bloomberg wouldn't be able to do much more. So that almost negates that issue against him.
And that would probably be, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is, so long as there is a Republican House of Representatives, it's almost impossible to see any sort of gun restrictions coming out of there.
Right.
I think there would be a lot of discussion there where the answer would be, look, okay, yes, you disagree with Mayor Bloomberg on gun rights, but you know, there's going to be if it makes a serious run, it probably so greatly damages the Democrats that a Bloomberg candidacy may even make it harder for the Democrats to retake the Senate, let alone the House. In which case, you're not really going to see any movement on gun legislation anyway.
Right, right. So we would have three candidates. Oh, I'm sorry. So we would have three candidates, again, going back to assuming it's Trump, Bloomberg, and Sanders. Trump wants to build a wall. Bloomberg wants to do away with guns. Sanders wants to get single payer. None of them could achieve their main issue, We'd have three people running, and nothing that they're proposing is realistic in any form or fashion.
But here's the thing about Bloomberg, though. I think Bloomberg – I mean, obviously, that is something that Bloomberg would want. But that's not going to be the only thing Bloomberg runs on. Bloomberg is not going to run a pure gun control campaign. He's going to say, look at what I did in New York. That's what I can do for the country. And I went back and checked that Times article while the two of you were talking. And it's specifically said that even if Clinton is nominated, that wouldn't necessarily stop Bloomberg from running. If he thinks she's been battered by Sanders and is weakened badly enough in the nomination process, that might still lead him to run. And he actually commissioned – the poll he commissioned was, how would I do against Trump and Clinton? So he's clearly looking at the possibility of running against Trump and Clinton, not just running against Trump and Sanders.
Okay, and last thing on this topic before we should move on is, so let's imagine let's imagine that Clinton ekes out a bloody win over Sanders, a long divisive campaign. You know, there are going to be people that say, oh, she shouldn't have won. It was the superdelegates that and the DNC threw it to her, blah, blah, blah. So she's, you know, she's beaten up. Trump is the nominee. Bloomberg decides to enter because he sees two very weakened candidates. And then Bernie Sanders says, well, wait a second. My people need to have a voice in this election, too. So he also runs as an independent. Now you have a four-way race. Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be, although I don't necessarily see Trump. I don't see Sanders doing it. Sanders would probably decide that he's Clinton over a barrel and he'll basically hold her for ransom to get for his support. And he'll probably tell Clinton, you either have to you have to swallow my entire platform for me to endorse you.
And he'll
probably
go
with it because in a three
for the most part, except for that
bizarre defense of private insurance from her daughter, which makes no sense in a Democratic primary, in my opinion.
Well, here's what's interesting: when Clinton ran against Obama, they clashed on health care, and once Obama won, he adopted her health care plan idea. So who's to say that she
Pretty
wouldn't
much.
Adopt single payer when she was elected?
And I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. That could very well happen. It could be. I don't see Sanders running. I think a Trump Bloomberg Clinton race or a Trump Bloomberg Sanders race would be interesting and exciting enough.
Yeah.
If it's Bernie Sanders, if Sanders really gets in and it's a four-way race, then those of us who are political geeks are just going to OD on this stuff, or we're going to die. And I'd rather not die, thank you very much.
I'm already ODing and dying on it. But let's move on to the most likable guy in the country, everybody's favorite uncle, Ted Cruz.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So what's the deal with Cruz's likability this week? And specifically, someone who I think knows him pretty well seems to have gotten an echo chamber going.
See, what I love about this story is everybody has someone from their past who just hates him. And it seems like Ted Cruz has like everybody from his past who just hates him enough so much that they're willing to come out and say, oh, Ted Cruz? Oh, yeah. He's an asshole. Oh, how much do I hate Ted Cruz? I'm willing to come out and just tell everyone. But this week it was Ted Cruz's freshman roommate at Princeton. It's a gentleman named Craig Mazin. And Craig Mazin is a screenwriter out in Hollywood. He's a pretty funny cat and has just been writing these hysterical little tweets all about what a jerk he was and what a terrible human being he was. Things like Bill Clinton could have been just the worst person in the world, a serial eater of planets, but Ted Cruz would still be an asshole.
About him having body odor.
Oh, yeah.
He talked about Cruz like talking, sizing up girls that he felt that he could hit on and score with. And then he said, and I don't think he ever was hooked up with a girl in all 4 years.
He suggested that Ted Cruz's favorite ice cream flavor is death penalty. But the best part about this, one of my favorite parts, because to be quite honest, I've always thought of Ted Cruz as that guy who's just such a weasel and who would be like, well, actually, I do think we should throw sand in that little girl's ice cream, or just a weasel, is that it's not just this guy. John McCain has come out and said, yeah, I really don't like this guy either. And
senators can't stand him. The other Republican senators, except Mike Lee, and maybe there's two or three others that like him.
But. Oh, yeah. Jacobs from Ohio. And there's a couple other cats who are also jerks. And no one likes them either. You know, and they just sit around, you know, torturing small animals or something like that. I mean, just weasels. But it's all coming out how disliked. And I can't tell if this is a media conspiracy. Like, it's all being dumped now. Am I being played? Or is it just like, oh, yeah, he really is disliked. Is it now just becoming truthful? Like oh, we're just now finding out that no one likes Jimmy Fallon. By the way, I don't know if anyone really doesn't like Jimmy Fallon or not, but it'd be great if no one did. and it's just everyone is letting – or if Trump is behind this, like I personally suspect, it all comes down to doesn't matter if he's a good leader, doesn't matter if he's a good president. He's just a jerk, and he was a jerk when he was 17 or 18 years old, and this guy's going to let everybody know it. So what do you think, DJ, since he's part of your party? I assume you see him at the prayer breakfasts every Monday.
Tuesday. I don't
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
I don't attend the prayer breakfasts. Sorry, I'm usually working at the time of the prayer breakfast, so I miss that. here's the thing, and you both are going to think I'm nuts.
No,
I think all of this helps him.
Really,
it is a gift, and I will tell you why it is a gift. You have voters, particularly Republican voters, who are mad as hell at everybody, who a plurality of whom at this point are willing to listen to a guy who's just talking about how we'll just tear the whole system down, how we'll blow it up, do this, do that, do the other thing, strong arm everybody on God's green earth, and they are supporting him. And I'm talking about Trump here because they can't stand everybody in Washington. And now everybody in Washington says, these people who these Trump voters and a lot of us have been seething at for years, if not decades in some cases, are now all coming out and saying, you know, we don't like Ted Cruz. We think he's a nasty guy. We don't really like him. And some of them are actually saying, and I mean Peter King, I mean supposedly Rudolph Giuliani, although I didn't see a link on that. I heard that secondhand, and a couple of other folks, Bob Dole, have said that would actually prefer Trump to Cruz. This is going to be something I call it an endorsement jujitsu, where an endorsement backfires.
More like Aikido.
I've only seen it really happen once, and that was in the 1994 governor's race in New York State. And ironically, Giuliani was there again when he endorsed Mario Cuomo against George Pataki. At the time, Cuomo was already ahead by about 3 or 4 points. It looked like he was going to eke it out. Giuliani came out and Giuliani endorsed Cuomo. And George, for the rest of the campaign, which was another 2 weeks, George Pataki's entire campaign basically boiled down to 4 words. The fix is in. The New York City boys have gotten together and they've decided who the governor is going to be, and the rest of the state can swallow it and take it, or they can vote for me and tell New York City to sod off. And it worked. Yeah. Pataki came back, he pulled ahead, and he won by about 3 or 4 points in an upset because everybody thought that the rest of that upstate and Long Island simply would roll over and do whatever New York City seemed to want. But it didn't happen that way.
Interesting.
Ted Cruz, whose entire campaign has basically been, I am the outsider. I am the guy that they don't like. I am the guy that they don't want to listen to because I am the guy who knows what's right and they don't want to admit it, is now being dumped on by everybody that Republicans internally can't stand. It's perfect for him.
Like Hollywood screenwriters.
Like Hollywood screenwriters on top of that.
Exactly.
Ted Cruz can now say, you know, all these people are nice guys, and they're nice guys who will roll over to the status quo and the lobbies and special interests. I'm the son of a bitch who'll stand up for you.
Yeah, and it's a good argument. And by the way, speaking of – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just – you know, it's just amazing that most Canadians are so polite and likable, and yet Ted Cruz, you know.
Well, yeah, except if they're hockey players. So, speaking of the fixes in, this week the Des Moines the Des Moines Register in Iowa, Iowa's leading newspaper, I believe, issued some endorsements. And as you guys know, they endorsed Marco Rubio on the Republican side, which of course should speak to DJ's heart, and on the Democratic side, they endorsed Hillary Clinton, which speaks to my heart. And a lot of people are saying, again, the establishment fix is in. What do you think?
Well, I think I'll first speak on the Rubio side, and then you two could speak on the Clinton side. But I think this is whatever people want to talk about the fix and everything else, and Trump and Cruz will, of course, use that. This is the shot in the arm that Rubio needed to make a move in Iowa. And in my opinion, he needs to make a move in Iowa now. There's a whole bunch of battling for second place in New Hampshire. There's even one poll that has Cruz ahead, that has Cruz in second place. There's another poll that has Kasich in second place. Sorry, Greg.
God, I hate this.
And, you know, Rubio put out a strategy, put it out in his campaign people put it out in a National Review article. It was third in Iowa, second in New Hampshire, first in South Carolina. Now I will acknowledge if Marco Rubio actually wins South Carolina, then everything I know about Republican Party politics is completely wrong, because I thought that would be one of the worst states for Rubio. I thought Nevada was a much better state for him. But they're betting the farm on winning South Carolina. Okay, that's your strategy. Fine. That means you need move in Iowa. Rubio needs to have momentum coming out of Iowa, and he's in the position to do it. He's in a weak third right now. If he goes from a weak third to a strong third or even a second – then he can say he has momentum with him, that he got the Iowa surge, that he's one of the big players now, that it's not just a Trump Cruz race, and that he can actually make the case that he should be considered. This is a big help for him. This is what he needed to start that. And the question now is, can he over the next 8 days build on that and get to either a strong third or quite possibly even a second or a first? I'm not saying I'm seeing him winning. I don't think he will. It'll be an outside shot for him to get second, but I think he can pull a strong third out of this, and that would be enough to get him in position to do a strong second, maybe even beat Trump in New Hampshire, and then go into South Carolina where they are convinced they'll win, and I'm just waiting to see if that's really going to happen. But it needs to be strong out of Iowa. Otherwise, the whole thing fizzles away.
Well, I haven't been following the Republican side in Iowa close enough to know whether Rubio has a real shot at coming in second or not, or even a strong third. But I'm going to take it at face value that you know, because I know that you have. So if you believe that to be the case, I will say if Marco Rubio can come in second in Iowa, that is the earthquake that, you know, the Republican side has been waiting for, because he will then become the establishment candidate, and it will become a two-person race. Now, again, we haven't stipulated here who we think is going to win Iowa, but regardless of whether it's Trump-Rubio-Cruz or Cruz-Rubio-Trump, if he could have that strong a showing, I think you could see a lot of people from the establishment of the right all of a sudden starting to come out in favor of him. A lot of endorsements.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, exactly. The one thing that we haven't talked about is the Des Moines Register. As far as what this actually means, it's not that big of a deal on how much it actually shifts. And it shifts every year a little bit less. Remember, print is dying, and it's not that big of a deal. In 2000 George W. Bush got the endorsement, and he actually lost votes after the endorsement. His it went down by 8%. I'm actually looking at our article. Uh-huh. I don't know this off the top of my head. And in 2008, Clinton got it, but her vote percentage actually only went up about 1%. This is all on 538, by the way. So they're saying that it's a significant, but it's only about 3%, which it's going to help Rubio, but not enough to actually propel him up to where he needs to be. And Clinton, yes, the thing that's nice about Clinton is it will help her to kind of seal the deal.
If there's a deal to be sealed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, mark my words, she's in. She's going to win Iowa. And then we're going to say, do you remember when we thought that Bernie Sanders actually had a chance? And we'll all laugh about this. And we'll go, bah, ha, ha, ha. But the nice thing about this is if this does help her, this will give her a little bit extra breathing room. And then she'll come out a little bit stronger. But I don't think it hurt her at all.
And I just want to say this, you know, between shows, I think about our show and you know, the different positions that we've taken. And I was laughing to myself this week as Sanders has, in some polls, either caught up with or maybe even surpassed her in Iowa. I don't know if that's true or not, but some polls suggest it. And as a Clinton supporter, of course, that makes me sad. But then I think, wow, I'm going to be able to give the biggest I told you so to Greg. And that's truly what's been keeping me going the last 2 weeks. So, Greg,
and that's really what politics is all about.
Absolutely, being able to say "I told you so" to my friends and prove that I was right and you were wrong,
and family too.
Yes.
Oh my gosh! These last past 8 years, when going there and seeing all those W stickers still on my family cars. It's just wonderful.
But I have a friend who lives in Iowa. In fact, I visited her over the summer, and she is a stay-at-home housewife, also a terrific writer. I shouldn't demean what she does, and a full-time student as well. But anyway, she doesn't have a job, so she goes to an unbelievable number of campaign events.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you. She has 3 jobs.
Yeah, right. She does, okay. Actually.
She has 3 jobs, so don't say she doesn't have a job. No, okay, I stuck up for her.
You did.
She owes me a Milky Way.
And she is a Democrat, and you know, I look to her. I constantly ask her, what's it feeling like on the ground? And I you know, asked her today, and she texted back that she says she doesn't think it's looking good for Hill. She thinks it's going to be Bernie and Trump. She thinks Hillary still has a chance. But it's going to require some you know, some a new take, a new spark, maybe a great closing message. But you know, that's my one source on the ground. Do you guys know anyone in Iowa or anyone in New Hampshire who's given you some inside information?
I've been kicked out of Iowa twice, so they don't even let me. They don't even accept my phone calls in Iowa anymore. Literally, my phone number is blocked. So no. No, and last time I left, I screamed, I've been kicked out of better states, but it's not true.
No,
I've never been kicked out of better states.
People who using that as a segue of people who should be kicked out of Iowa, a new face came into the campaign this week, Ms. Sarah Palin. The former governor came out and endorsed Donald Trump and is now making some appearances for him. And I wanted to ask you guys, does it help? Does it hurt? Is it a wash? What do you think?
Trump this week said, I could go into the middle of downtown New York and shoot someone and I'd still get elected.
Well, he said my supporters would still support me. This week.
Right. My supporters would still support him. So I don't think having, you know, someone who's medic, who I honestly think has an issue with her medication. I honestly believe that because if you heard her speech, I mean, it just rambled. And I said, I'm no longer amused. I'm more concerned with Sarah Palin. I don't think having that hurts him. I mean, he's going to have like, what's the next thing he's going to do? I mean, springtime for Hitler? I mean, seriously, there's nothing he can do at this point. Dig up the bones of Strom Thurmond. I mean,
I agree.
He might as
well. I think it's a net positive. What do you think, DJ?
I think this is a reminder of the phrase "a week is a lifetime in politics." Because on Monday, I think it was, I'm not sure it was Monday or Tuesday when Palin made the endorsement. But Palin makes the endorsement, and that essentially gives Donald Trump the It gives him the imprimatur of the ultimate anti-establishment candidate. He can now claim to be the ultimate insurgent. He has the ultimate maverick behind him, blah, 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 blah. And then 2 days later, Bob Dole literally throws cold water over everything by saying he would be a better candidate than Ted Cruz. I mean, anything that Sarah Palin could have given him, Bob Dole essentially took away. And Bob Dole didn't even try to do it.
So, and lastly, because we are running out of time, but the Democrats added a debate this week. Now, that is good for democracy, but probably bad for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who, you know, was under the target of all of the Sanders supporters and all of the O'Malley supporter, I should say O'Malley supporter, who felt that she had stacked the deck in favor of Hillary by only scheduling 6 debates.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to interrupt there. I didn't get to weigh in last week about the debate last week. O'Malley did a wonderful job. And if any other year that did not have a name candidate, O'Malley would actually be doing much, much better. I mean, he did wonderfully. And I think that, I mean, did everyone agree with me?
No, I don't agree. No. I think he did passably.
And if it were any other year, and if it, and Kevin, Greg, if it were any other year, sorry, I'm getting you confused. Seriously though, Greg.
We look a lot alike.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
I know what you say. All Democrats look alike. I mean,
no, from the other side, it's just from the other side of the phone, the two of you look alike. But if it were any other year, Martin O'Malley would have enough scrutiny on the 30-odd taxes that he imposed on Maryland voters, that he would be right back at the percentage that he is now.
Right.
Still, I thought he did a fine performance. But I think a town hall is a great idea.
Yeah. And if it were also any other year, then when the whole Freddie Gray tragedy hit, every other Democrat would have pointed at him and said, yeah, he was mayor of that city. He helped run it into the ground. Do you really want that in the White House?
Yeah.
No. Although, if it were any other year, Martin O'Malley would be right where he is now.
Although I will say this, I think Martin O'Malley is going to be a very significant player in the Iowa caucus for this reason. O'Malley, I don't think he'd get to 15% support in most of the caucuses across the state. And as DJ brought up last week, and Greg, I'm sure you know, on the Democratic side in the Iowa caucus, a candidate who cannot achieve 15% in any individual caucus meeting, his voters have to go to one of the other candidates. So you're going to have people on the Bernie side, people on the Hillary side, politicking in these meetings, trying to get those people to, you know, your vote isn't going to count. You have to move. Who are you going to move to? Come to us because blah, 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 or this.
Yeah.
I think that could be a big decisive
mark
against Hillary, because frankly, I think most O'Malley voters are anti-Hillary Clinton voters.
Oh, I disagree. I think most O'Malley voters are not Democratic Socialists.
No, they're not, but I think they're anti-Hillary Clinton people. I don't see any other reason in this 3-person race why someone would back Martin O'Malley over Hillary Clinton unless they just can't stand Hillary Clinton.
Oh, I see.
But that's something that they say every time. I heard that with the Gingrich and Santorum people in 2012. Yeah. The Santorum people said over and over and over again, well, if Gingrich would just drop out, then we know that all those voters would go to us instead of Romney. And then they did a poll and they found out Gingrich supporters actually preferred Romney.
Interesting.
Yeah, thing we know about Martin O'Malley voters is that they want Martin O'Malley first. We don't know who their second choice is. It is quite possible that there are a lot of people who would prefer Clinton to Sanders. But because O'Malley's in the race, they don't have to make that choice yet, so they're parking their vote with O'Malley. We won't know what they're actually going to do until they have to do it.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And that's what's going to make this next week or this next 8 days really interesting.
Oh, I'm so excited. I mean, it is – once it's on, and then it's just like a downhill thing. And
here's the thing, because the three of us are political geeks and we live for this stuff. Obviously, I'm speaking for everybody, but I'm sure you'd agree. But the thing that made me depressed this week was when I realized, you know, we've been talking about this and fighting about this and analyzing this since April. And once the voting begins on February 1st in Iowa, it just starts. That's just the beginning of a year-long process. And
what, everything, and that depresses you?
Yeah, because
that excites me.
I can't handle any more of this.
We got the first exit polls, entrance polls.
Oh, I know.
I don't know that I can handle this anymore. It's just overwhelming.
This has been 9 months of foreplay. It's time for the inappropriately deleted to begin.
Well, I like that metaphor. What I was thinking of, which was a slightly different metaphor, was it feel. I have an 18-year-old son, and we're picking colleges now and sending in our applications and trying to figure out, what he's going to need next year. And all of this is like preamble to 4 long years of college. It's like all of the worrying, all of the buildup, all of the which school do we go to, that all goes out the window and starts from day one once he goes into college. And that's how I feel about this primary season. Everything that happened up until next Monday was just nothingness, and the real race starts on Monday.
I see this. If I'm going to use your analogy, I see once we get a Democrat in office, that's the college.
Okay.
Then we have to go through all the rigmarole of Congress, and we've got to blame this, and oh no, we got to show birth certificates, and oh no, we got to go to House. Yep. Commission races and investigations and another FBI investigation and
okay,
there's going to be a lot of them.
We've got pretty much a show here. Any last thoughts? Any predictions for the week? Any final insights you want to impart on us?
I think Donald Trump will do something outrageous. I think Hillary will be on full attack mode and will actually say something she regrets. And I think the Hillary campaign actually works best when they leave Bernie alone and let Bernie make his own mistake, but they won't do that. That's going to be the thing we're going to watch, as the Hillary campaign just makes mistake after mistake this week, as they are prone to do. That's going to be my – and you're going to say, do you remember someone saying that? That's going to be me.
Okay, DJ?
I am going to I'm going to go with the triumph of hope over experience here. I am going to say that Rubio makes the surge that I want him to make, and that by the time we do this a week from now, the question will not just be who wins Iowa between Trump and Cruz, but also will Rubio catch up to Trump and Cruz?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to revolt and say that I think we have to wrap up this show. It's been a great one. Obviously, next Sunday is going to be a magic night because it's one night before the Iowa caucus. And we'll be back here sharing our insights and hopefully some laughs with you. Emily, we missed you this week. And until next week, that's it for A More Perfect Union. Thanks for listening.